Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
And welcome to episode 181 of Geek Town Radio. I'm back this week with Daryl. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks. What have you been up to since we actually saw each other in person for a rare brief appearance at Comic-Con last week?
Indeed. There was some crossover between the Midlands and the Essex Massive.
Yes.
And that little get-together we call London MCM Comic-Con.
Yes, yes.
But since then, I'm doing lots of press coverage of that, which you can catch over on Hollywood News Source.
Yeah.
I have been indulging in some B-movie extraordinaire with Lake Placid Legacy, which is a straight-to-TV sci-fi movie. It came out for Shark Week, so back in the summer.
Okay.
And is probably mostly notable for starring two stars of sci-fi, both from Winona Earp, Catherine Burrell,
right,
who is half of Way Hot for fans of Winona Earp.
Yes.
And Tim Roseon, who plays Doc.
Okay. You say it came out for Shark Week, but the basic thing for Lake Placid is a giant crocodile, isn't it? So
yes, but sci-fi Shark Week is not quite the same as, say, Discovery Channel Shark Week.
Oh,
they
okay.
They generally like to hit you with, they have a pretty much a week of all sorts of shark and monster-related B-movies. They also had Deep Blue Sea 2.
Right.
Which is about super smart sharks.
Of course.
Perhaps that's more thing. But yeah, it was a simple B-movie, pretty straightforward, pretty fun. Not more than that. I've seen better, I've seen worse. It's good to see those two actors in something other than Winona Earp. It's an interesting change.
Good.
Yep. Other than that, The Gifted has finally come back.
Yes.
To UK shores. And we've got a few episodes in to see the ongoing story of how one family deals with sort of the rising tide of mutants versus humans. A very realistic take on what it would be if the X-Men were real. And in the real world, lots of political comparisons could be made to us now. And I think, I know I might be in the minority, but I think the fact that it is sort of centered around this family really works in making people get really grabbed by the drama.
I do like that show. I think they've done a really good job with it. You have some mutants, you know, and some mutants that have sort of connections to the X-Men, but not directly using any of the X-Men because they're sort of kept for the films, although it's going to be interesting to see what happens with that once the Disney Fox thing goes through and that sort of X-Men franchise is probably dead as we know it. So I don't know what's going to happen when that all happens.
I don't think it has to change because there is no reason to change Gifted. It's not suffering from lack of X-Men. I think it really works in the idea of what happens when sort of the best ideal of what mutants are gone. I've been heard from for years, what do you do? What happens in that vacuum? And as you watch for the episodes, you get to see exactly what happens in that vacuum.
Yeah.
So if you've got Fox, and I don't know if you haven't seen already, how you would access the first season. I'm sure you could probably buy it off Amazon.
Yeah.
But yeah, get those episodes down. Yeah. It's a really great show, really compelling characters. I just think it's a really well-written show, and it continues to be so.
Yeah. Plus, I mean, we've had the advantage that if they did want to tie it back into the wider X-Men universe, although they've always said it was sort of tangentially connected to the X-Men universe. We've never actually seen any of them. So mm-hmm. not even in pictures. So, you could still keep that show going, even if they changed all the X-Men movies and reintroduced them in the Disney universe. You could still keep that show going.
Especially as that. Even with the current X-Men universe is like set up to like the 80s. Yeah. And obviously Gifted is very much, this is very much now.
Yeah.
So very much in the 20 somethings, because obviously they never give you details about the year in case they want to do a time jump.
Yeah, yeah.
That's where you're just getting started. The other thing that I've been watching is I watched The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina.
Okay. Are you all the way through that?
Yes. I watched the whole thing.
Okay.
To hold my hand up as one of those people who, when I first started writing up all the stories about it, was thinking, I'm not sure this is a great idea. Mm. The actual execution of it, amazing.
Yeah.
I watched the first episode and then I had to do something else. And then I think I came back and I watched the next four.
Right, okay.
And finished it over the course of about maybe 4 days or 3 days.
I watched the first two. I think I said last week, I found the first episode a little bit slow in places, but really sort of picked up towards the end of it and then really got into it in the second episode. I just haven't had time to go back to it yet. But it is sort of next on my list of things. There's just too much stuff around at the moment. And Comic-Con and things got in the way. Yeah. But I did really enjoy that second episode, and I'm looking forward to going back and watching the rest of it now.
Yeah, there was a lot of setup, but it's definitely a case of only one episode that was slow.
Yeah.
So that was helpful. Yeah, I would recommend it to people. I think the only unfortunate thing I've seen from that is so many lazy articles about Sabrina does right, what Riverdale does wrong, and all that sort of thing.
Right.
And, and that's not the case.
Yeah.
In fact, they do exactly the same thing.
Yeah.
And Riverdale's first season compared to Sabrina, it's pretty much the same. They hit the same sort of notes. They have that nice typewriting. Everything stays interesting. The plot just pushes on. You're always interested to see what happens next. The only difference is that Riverdale has other seasons, which didn't go as well.
Yeah.
And can't compare them because so many shows are great in their first season and then fall off a cliff in a second.
True. Yeah.
So I can only hope that with the two season order that they always known they've had since they've begun production, I'm hoping to see something different from Chilling Adventures of Sabrina.
Yeah.
Though pessimists might argue, given they have almost exactly the same creative head and showrunner, why would it be any different? But we shall see.
It's also kind of almost half the order of, each season is sort of half the order of the Riverdale season, because isn't the Riverdale 22 episodes and this is like
The first season, they opened it to the 20, which was a bad idea, but so just for a whole other time. I think it is two. Well, the first season was 10 episodes. So I assume the second season is 10 episodes of one as well.
Yeah.
And perhaps it might open up for season three.
After
I've watched the whole season, it's left me with some questions which sort of come up after you've watched it and you sort of look at things and look at the setting and some things don't quite make sense.
Right.
That's sort of a longer view, and I think that's just personal thing.
Yeah.
It's just sort of questions about Sabrina and the way that she's set up.
Right, okay.
Which I think they don't do a good enough. They don't explain her motivations. And like, for instance, how she spent sort of like the years before we come to see her.
Right, okay.
Which would help us understand it a little bit more.
Yeah.
And the last thing on my list is Marvel's Daredevil.
Yeah, again, another one I haven't got to the end of yet, but I've got to go back and finish. I've just had too many other things.
Finish it now. An excellent return to form. A Daredevil season that is actually about Daredevil and not some other interloper taking precious time. It's really good. I mean, it's got lots of Kingpin. That's all you need. I mean, definitely and by far and away, the best Marvel villain across movies and TV.
Yeah.
Such a real menacing figure who you can understand his motivations, and it makes sense when you see him on screen. The way that, unfortunately, a lot of, especially with Marvel, who've always had a problem with villains.
Yeah.
Evan just need to somehow capture that, put it in a bowl and start spinning it around the rest of their products.
I think they've got better with their villains over the years. I think Vincent D'Onofrio is just perfect as Kingpin. I really like David Tennant in the first season of Jessica Jones, and they also did a great job with Thanos for the movie as well. I thought I liked. Well, I thought they did a good job with Thanos.
Jody Thanos, I don't know. It was very hard to get much of an understanding about him, but also because he's changed from the character I know in the comics, so it's probably hard for me to accept. David Tennant's a purple man, yes, but the problem with him is that he was just so overpowered. It's no fun when the villain is just near unstoppable. Kingpin is near unstoppable because he's smart. Yeah. Purple Man is unstoppable because you have to do everything he says. He has no worries. He also has no motivations other than amusing himself. Whereas we see, as you know from the first season, that the thing that motivates Wilson Fisk is his love for Vanessa.
Yeah.
He has skin in the game. Things could happen to Vanessa in a way that things wouldn't happen to the Purple Man.
Yeah.
So that's what I mean by having a compelling event. Someone who isn't so powerful as it's just ridiculous as you can't ever beat them. Mm. And someone who you can understand their motivations.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I don't know. I think David Tennant did a very good job in that role. And I think you needed somebody
He was generally creepy and disturbing, but I just felt he was so overpowered that it's hard to accept him losing. It's hard to accept how he would come undone in a way that you can understand. I'd appreciate the steps that go into, say, Kingpin's downfall.
Yeah.
That you don't with the Purple Man's downfall. But okay. That's just me.
Okay.
It's definitely, you know, depends on you.
Yeah. Well, my stuff this week, I've been watching a lot of Counterpart. I've now finished the first season of that, which is on the Stars Play channel on Amazon.
That one is premium channels.
That's one of the premium channels, yes, on Amazon. I think it's $5.99. There's a 30-day free trial, I think, but it's $5.99 per month for that, which is pricey, but they do have some quite good stuff on there. They've got Mr. Mercedes on there, Counterpart's on there. The second season of Counterpart is coming fairly soon. I'm actually going to be talking to some of the stars of Counterpart later this week. So that's why I was sort of trying to finish the first season. They actually sent me the first couple of episodes of the next season as well, which obviously I'm not going to talk about because that's not out yet. Yeah. But I thought the first season ended brilliantly. If you've not seen Counterpart, it's kind of like if you mixed something like an espionage drama like Homeland with a sci-fi drama like Fringe.
I've watched a couple of episodes.
It's a really interesting mix of basically this idea of a parallel world has emerged and there are differences between the two, but there's a group which are sort of keeping it quiet and guard the gateway between each of the two worlds, and it's very much plays out like an espionage drama between both these worlds, and stars J.K. Simmons in the sort of leading role of this guy who ends up having to deal with his counterpart from the other side, as there is a killer that has come across from their side to ours to take out a bunch of people. I really enjoyed the first season. I thought it was really compelling. So it continues that on through the second season as well. Thoroughly enjoyable. I think all new Star shows are now going to go out on that, on Stars Play as well. I think that's the plan. So definitely worth getting hold of Stars Play, even if you only kind of put it on for a month or so you can watch Counterpart and maybe Mr. Mercedes and then turn it off for a bit while you wait for new things to come out. I mean, it's worth doing, definitely. The other thing I watched was The First, which is this Sean Penn Mars drama that started on Channel 4. The first episode doesn't actually give a whole lot away. It's basically, you learn quite early on that Sean Penn was supposed to be the person that's leading this mission to Mars, and for reasons unknown got benched, and he's watching the Mars mission take off. I don't want to give anything away, but things don't quite go as planned, let's say, for that. And it's sort of dealing with the aftermath of that. The first episode really doesn't go much further than that, so it's very hard to judge. But it's a really interesting drama. It seems to be quite well written, very much the sort of thing you would like to see on Channel 4. It's got that kind of slightly set in the future, so the technology is recognizable but slightly more advanced than maybe what most people have at the moment. I think the production design on it's lovely. They've done some really nice little jobs on things. But I will be watching a few more episodes, and I don't want to talk about it too much because, as I say, it's very difficult to judge from that, just that early thing. The other big thing this week has been Red Dead Redemption 2, which I've spent pretty much the whole weekend playing on and off. I'm probably about 25 hours into it now. I think I'm about 30% through the main story.
You see, that's why I've watched Netflix shows.
Yes, that's very true. I've been Red Dead Redemption really has taken time away. I mean, I've actually got a Fallout beta as well, and I've not even touched that.
I saw a stream of that.
Yeah. The Red Dead stuff has really just got hold of me at the moment. It's great fun. I'm thoroughly enjoying it. I've been fishing a bit. You can sit down with some old guys and play dominoes. You can play poker. You can play blackjack. You can rob trains. You can rob carriages. You can go hunting. And I mean, it's just open and, you know, to do whatever you want with. And I'm having endless hours of fun just wandering around in that world. So I would say it's definitely worth the money. You're going to get your money's worth out of it, I think. And also, sticking with sort of gaming-related stuff, Netflix revealed their first look at Henry Cavill as Geralt from The Witcher. It was a makeup test. Did you see the little video of this?
I didn't see the video, I just saw the pictures.
I mean, the video doesn't really give away a huge amount. The video is basically Henry walking towards the camera as Geralt, and you see what he looks like, and then he drinks a potion bottle, and that's it. But it literally was the makeup test that they released, which is kind of rare, but it shows you how much people are waiting for this show. He looks good, I think. I mean, no beard in this, but then Geralt doesn't always have a beard, so I think that's fine. I think he looks great, though. Very much.
I can't comment. I've never played The Witcher, so.
Oh, haven't you? It's an awesome, awesome video game if you've never played it. The third one, particularly, is one of the best RPG games ever made, so well worth playing. But I think he looks great. And they also said the date of release will be 2019. And we originally thought it was probably going to be 2020, but 2019, they've said, which I'm very happy about. So that's good. That's all the stuff we've been doing this week. Let's move on to some TV and film news. So we start off the TV and film news with the renewals, cancellations and pickups, as ever. We start off with Divorce has been renewed for its third season. Not a show I ever watched. It's an HBO series, but okay. Not one that massively appealed to me. But Sarah Jessica Parker, I think, is the lead in that. But renewed for its third season, that. Sky has renewed The Discovery of Witches for two more seasons, apparently. I have to say, this first season, I've actually given up on at the moment. I may go back to it. Oh. But it's...
See, I was thinking of starting it this after I heard about that.
Yeah, and, it's...
Well, I haven't really heard anything about it outside of the fact that it's been renewed and the massive sort of marketing push I've been seeing.
It's been doing very well in terms of numbers for Sky. It's slow, though. It's really plodding in its pace, and that's really starting to bug me. So I'm about three or four episodes in, but I'm struggling with it purely for that reason. If it's coming back for a couple more seasons, which it obviously is, I do hope they manage to speed it up a little bit, because I found the first season incredibly plodding so far. I will try and go back to it, but I'd be interested to know your thoughts. Just if you go watch a few episodes of it, tell me what you think. But I found the first season very, very plodding. One big, massive piece of news this week. The BBC has signed a effectively carriage deal with US network FX, which will mean that all new FX scripted comedy and drama will be now on the BBC somewhere. We don't know exactly where yet, but it will be on the BBC somewhere. But that does mean it will now be the home for Pose, the new Ryan Murphy drama, Mayans MC, the Kurt Sutter follow-on from Sons of Anarchy, which I'm very, very much looking forward to. Those two are definitely confirmed. There is a new drama related to director, choreographer and dancer Bob Fosse, which is untitled at the moment, but there is that in the works. That's supposed to be coming. Devs, which is the new eight-part Alex Garland show, which is a sci-fi series, which... That looks like it's going to be really good. So there's that one coming. What We Do in the Shadows, which is Takeda Waititi's, that's the Thor Ragnarok director, that's from him, which is a new vampire drama. And it says it's it's not a drama, actually. I think it's a comedy. It's about three vampires who have been roommates for hundreds and hundreds of years trying to cope in the modern world.
Wasn't there a British show like that that had the guys from Flight of the Conchords in it?
I don't know. There may have been. But so that's what we do in the shadows. Better Things we've got coming, which is a comedy about a girl who is a single working actor with no filters raising her three daughters. And then Mrs. America, which is a new show with Kate Blanchett, true story of the movement to ratify the Equal Rights Amendment. So it's a very interesting deal for the BBC to do this, because usually with these sort of carriage deals, at the moment, the big person that's been doing it has been Sky Atlantic.
Mm-hmm.
It's quite interesting that this deal's gone to the BBC. You would have thought that Sky would be the obvious people to pick this up, but apparently the BBC have decided it's worth the money. So, I mean, they have been running quite a lot of those shows already from FX, like The Assassination of Gianni Versace, Atlanta, Trust, Snowfall. They're all FX shows. People versus AJ, Taboo was co-created with FX as well. So, I mean, it makes sense, I think, for them to pick it up. But I'm just very happy that they now have a home in the UK for Mayans. Where they'll actually end up, we don't know. It could be BBC One, could be BBC Two. It could be that they create an iPlayer channel for it and they all go up on there. Don't know. At the moment, we're waiting to see what happens with those. But hopefully the ones that have at least been out, like Pose and Mayans, come fairly soon, but we don't know yet. Oh yeah, this was another one I wanted to mention on the BBC. Peter Jackson's They Shall Not Grow Old. This is this movie that he's created, which takes a bunch of old World War footage.
The colorized stuff.
Yeah, and I mean, it's not only sort of colorized, it's colorized, cleaned. They've then used voices of real-life veterans, because obviously a lot of it was silent. So voices of real-life veterans, actors and stuff, and put new sound over it. So you get to hear them kind of chatting backwards and forwards, and they've sort of done lip reading stuff on it so you can tell what they're saying, and then given scripts to people so they can kind of fill out the script. I mean, it's a phenomenal, phenomenal piece of work. It's been out in cinemas on a sort of limited release, and there are a few people that have seen it and says it's one of the best films they've seen this year. I'm really, really looking forward to seeing that. It's out on Sunday, the 11th of November at 9:30 on BBC Two. So I would urge everybody to go and watch that, because I think it's going to be really, really interesting. Another order that came through, Showtime have picked up a Penny Dreadful continuation series or spin-off series. It's described as the spiritual descendant of the Penny Dreadful story. It's called Penny Dreadful City of Angels, which moves everything from Victorian London to 1938 Los Angeles in a time and place deeply infused with Mexican-American folklore and social tension. So there's a lot of your sort of voodoo-y kind of stuff aligned with the devil and all, an occult myth and all that kind of thing going on with it, which is an interesting kind of direction to take it, given how sort of British feeling the first season was, to sort of move it into that kind of area. Same group behind it, same writers, same creator. Not one that I expected to come back, really, Penny Dreadful. I don't know whether you watched any of the first.
I did watch a few episodes, maybe three or four, but it just felt too plodding for me.
Yeah.
And it just felt all over the place. Sort of shoehorning all those different legends into one show, just, it was too much for me. So I just sort of stopped watching. I know that it's like a critical darling and stuff, but
yeah.
Just didn't work for me.
I kind of gave up on it after, I think I watched the first couple of seasons, and it just didn't really grab me for the third season, and then they cancelled it. So I was like, well, I'm not going to bother. So yeah, I'm told it didn't end particularly well. So maybe this will help satisfy some people, but I don't know. It'll be interesting to see what happens with that. Moving on to some bigger news stories, Naomi Watts and Josh Whitehouse have been cast in the Game of Thrones prequel, which now also appears to have a name called The Long Night. This is the prequel for Game of Thrones from Jane Goldman, the woman behind Kingsman, Kick-Ass, X-Men, First Class, and wife of Jonathan Ross. She is the person that's going to be showrunner and is the main writer on this. The story was concocted together with George R.R. Martin. It's set thousands of years before the events of Game of Thrones, so don't don't expect to see any familiar characters in it. Chronicles the world's descent from the golden age of heroes into its darkest hour. One thing's for sure, from the horrifying secrets of Westeros' history to the true origins of the White Walkers, the Mysteries of the East, the Stark legend, it's not the story we think we know. So it sounds like there's going to be some retrofitting of things that we've been told as historical fact in Game of Thrones, and they're sort of going back and going to be altering some of that. But, you know, it's all done with George R. R. Martin's involvement, so I think maybe that was his plan all along. We don't know, but I don't know, it's going to be interesting. They've not announced any of the characters other than Naomi Watts will be playing a charismatic socialite hiding a dark secret.
Secret, yeah. Yeah, I've read that a couple of times this week.
Yes, that's...
Yeah, retcons, I'm not a big fan. Especially the things that are books, kind of drives me nuts. To be honest, I'll put it this way. It's not something that I'm putting down in my calendar and keenly are waiting for, to be honest.
I don't know. I mean, it's going to be difficult because we haven't had the final season of Game of Thrones yet. Assuming that ends well, there is obviously going to be a clamouring for more Game of Thrones related stuff. We don't even know whether this is the thing that's going to go all the way. I mean, it's the first thing out of the five scripts that they had written. It's the first one that they're trying to pilot. So it may not go to full series. We don't know. George has actually said that some of the others are still in development as well. So whether that means they're going to do multiple spin-offs or whether that's just them hedging their bets just in case this one doesn't work, they want to make sure that some of the other pilot scripts are up to scratch, you know, if they want to make them. I don't know. We'll have to wait and see. Yeah, I don't know. It's likely to probably not be until 2020 before we see this, because given that we've got Game of Thrones coming back next year, I doubt they're going to want to put this out next year. It's more likely
I think we'd be lucky if we get in 2020.
Yeah.
Because it is a pilot, so
they've got to shoot the pilot, yeah.
Do we know where they're going? Are they all automatically going to HBO or are they going elsewhere?
Oh, they're all HBO. They're all HBO commissioned. HBO commissioned all the pilots, so they will be all HBO shows, so Sky Atlantic shows over here. So it will be the same level of quality. It's not got the same guys behind it. As I say, Jane Goldman is going to be the showrunner for this one if it moves forward, but that is by in no way a guarantee at the moment. It may fall to bits and they decide to pilot one of the others. We don't know yet. But interesting, I think, that we're seeing some movement on that. Another book adaptation coming as well, ish. It's not
they
a
keep,
direct...
They keep on coming.
Yes, it's a vague book adaptation. BBC America's greenlit a show called The Watch, which is a new series based on Sir Terry Pratchett's popular and beloved Discworld novels.
Oh, yeah.
It's inspired by the legendary City Watch, which is a sort of subset of the Discworld novels. I don't know whether they've ever actually been individually in their own novel, or I don't think they have. I think they've just been throughout the Discworld novels. Apologies to Pratchett's friend. I do like Terry Pratchett. I'm not that up on the whole novel series because there are quite a lot of them. So The Watch is described as a punk rock thriller inspired by the legends of the City Watch. This disruptive character-driven thriller centers on Terry Pratchett's misfit cops as they fight to save a ramshackled city of normalized wrongness from both past and future in a perilous quest. Modern inclusive, The Watch will feature many famous Discworld creations, including the City Watch Captain Sam Vimes, the last scion of nobility, Lady Sybil Ramkin, the naive but heretic Carrot, the mysterious Angua, and the ingenious non-binary forensic expert Cheery, together with Terry Pratchett's iconic characterization of death. So yes, eclectic mix of cast there. It's been written by Simon Allen, who has written The Musketeers, Das Boot, and New Tricks, co-produced with Naviteria and BBC Studios. I mean, I'm always happy to see Terry Pratchett adaptations hit TV. It's basically the same team that doing the Good Omens adaptation for Amazon Prime, you know, and we've got that coming, I think, early next year. It's quite a good time for being a Terry Pratchett fan, I think. And lastly, we have Ewan McGregor joining Birds of Prey movie as Black Mask. This is the upcoming DCU Birds of Prey movie. If you don't know Black Mask, he's a really fun villain. Roman Sionis is the real name of Black Mask. Birds of Prey movie is the one that stars Margot Robbie back as Harley Quinn. It's got Mary Elizabeth Winstead as Huntress, Journey Smollett-Bell as Black Canary, Rosie Perez also joins the cast as Rini Montoya. I mean, we know the DC universe is a mess at the moment. We've talked about this, but I don't know. I'm quite looking forward to seeing what they do with this. I think Ewan McGregor's a really interesting choice because you don't see him play villainous characters very much usually. So I think this is kind of an interesting choice for Black Mask. Do you know much about Black Mask?
No, not much. There's some reading, but I've never sort of read a comic that he's been in.
There's been various characterizations of him. The basic backstory of him is he was a young lad who grew up to very uncaring and very self-absorbed parents who cared more about their social status than their own son. They would mingle with other prominent Gotham families, including the Waynes, despite utter disdain for like the other socialite classes. It was this sort of hypocrisy of this social masks that his parents wore that drew Roman towards physical masks. As he sort of gets older, he falls in love with a girl. His parents reject the girl because she's the wrong status and not right for him and force him to break up with her. This is sort of one of the final straws. He ends up killing his parents and burning their mansion down. She ends up breaking up with him after he takes over his parents' cosmetics company, and one of the cosmetics ends up disfiguring a bunch of women because it isn't tested properly. So she ends up breaking up with him after realizing sort of all the horrible things he's done. In despair, he breaks into his parents' tomb, and his parents' tomb is made out of ebony material, and he ends up sort of smashing off a piece of the ebony material and carving a mask out of it, and that's the sort of Black Mask that he wears. What I rather like about some of the characterizations of Black Mask is he tends to be an incredibly intelligent person that surrounds himself by idiots quite a lot of the time. And he's sort of, there's a sort of logging despair of everybody around him. And he has that sort of air of everybody else is beneath him. He's a really interesting villain. So I don't know exactly what direction they're going to go with him on this, but I'm quite excited to see Ewan McGregor do this kind of role. One of the reasons he's doing this role is because he's previously worked with Mary Elizabeth Winstead on Fargo season 3. They then started dating, so she sort of roped in her boyfriend to get the role in this, which I thought was interesting. But it's going to be interesting seeing him doing sort of more villainous roles, so I'm quite looking forward to that. I mean, I know, as I say, the DCU is a complete mess at this point, and I hope they manage to sort it out, but I think this is kind of interesting.
Yeah, I'll be interested in seeing the Birds of Prey film. Yeah. It's a little bit more up my alley than that, which we will not speak about.
Well, that could be any of them.
So true.
Hopefully this will help get it back on track, but we'll see. It's been directed by Cathy Yan and is due to arrive in cinemas in 2020, so there is a bit of a wait for Birds of Prey, so we'll have to wait and see. So that's all the news for this week. We'll move on to the interview.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
The interview this week is with ex-B52 band member and the Good Cop composer, Pat Irwin. Pat was a member of the B52s for over 20 years. You will know the B52s most probably from their hit Love Shack, which he can be seen in the background playing the keyboard in the video. He is also the composer of shows such as Rocko's Modern Life, the classic 90s cartoon series. He composed for
God, that show was insane.
Yeah, composed for Nurse Jackie as well, AMC's Feed the Beast. His latest thing that he's been composing for is The Good Cop, which is the Netflix show starring Tony Danza and Josh Groban. He's also doing a film version of Rocko's Modern Life, which they're doing for Nickelodeon, that called Rocko's Modern Life Static Cling. So we talk a bit about sort of his work on Rocko's Modern Life, also about the music for The Good Cop, and various other things he's worked on. Here's the interview with Pat Irwin. We'll see you afterwards with some highlights for next week on TV. Thank you for coming on and spending a little bit of time to talk to me about your work.
Well, thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. I've been watching some of The Good Cop, which I know is the show you're working on at the moment, or have recently been working on, which is great fun. It's kind of an oddity for a Netflix show. It feels more like a network show than it does a Netflix show. Not that that's a criticism in any way. It's normally what you expect from Netflix. So it's quite nice. It's an interesting change from the normal Netflix output.
Well, that was the intention from the get-go. The creator, Andy Breckman, said that right out to me right away. And I don't think I got it right away. But I knew that he didn't want to make The Sopranos, and I knew that he didn't want to do Breaking Bad.
Yeah.
He wanted to do something that you could watch with your kids or your parents.
Yeah.
And he also wanted each one to be self-contained. He didn't want it to be something that you watched incrementally and you had to hold on and keep watching and watching and watching. You could just sort of take it in at that moment. And it's a throwback to that.
Yeah.
And even the font is a throwback, and the vibe, the acting is a throwback, but not completely. He's a pretty impressive guy, Andy Breckman. And his show, this is a direct, line from Monk to The Good Cop. And I think I'm still learning things about it as it goes along.
Yeah. So how did you get involved with it?
Well, there are not that many people in New York doing this.
Right.
First of all. It's a fairly small community. And I had worked with the producer and the music supervisor on Nurse Jackie, as well as Bored to Death.
Yeah.
And they recommended me. But that doesn't mean I got the job. They just recommended me. So I don't really know who else was in the air, but it's definitely came from, working on Bored to Death and Nurse Jackie.
It's a really interesting music as well for that show. It's sort of very bluesy, kind of jazzy feel to it. It's very piano led. I'm so used to talking to people and there's like loads of electronics or there's like a huge orchestra involved or something, and it's quite nice hearing a show which is kind of pared down to it seems like a small group of instruments that you're using for that.
Yes. I mean, Andy wanted piano.
Yeah.
And so that was the direction. And then a little more direction came out. He mentioned the movie The Firm. And right. Then he mentioned one song by Dave Brubeck, which kind of opened a window because of the percussion on that. And that's Unsquare Dance, which came after Take Five. I think that was the record after Take Five.
Right.
And I kind of just took that and made it what it was, took it for what it was. And I tried to listen to The Firm, the soundtrack from that. You know, this is something that film composers have to deal with all the time. There's a temp score or temp direction. And I like it. I like that challenge. I like finding a way to communicate with the director about the temp score. So I took that direction. And as it went along, I knew that I had to expand the sound from solo piano to something else. I just needed more variety. And then I started to latch on to my childhood of cop shows.
Right.
Whether it was, I don't know, I didn't grow up with Peter Gunn, but I certainly knew that theme.
Yeah.
Lalo Schifrin, like Mission Impossible, and that kind of small band sound. The band is small because of practical reasons.
Yeah.
I could overdub sample orchestra sounds, I suppose, and it would probably work, but I just didn't want to do that. I wanted to have a live band, and that band is killing. They are on another level. I have always wanted to work with the drummer, Kenny Wollison, and the bass player, Tony Shearer. And I know them from all sorts of different musicians, from John Zorn to Bill Frisell to Tom Waits, just on and on. I've been a fan of those guys. So working with them was a big deal to me. The piano player, John Coward, is also on another level. He is in a group with Brian Blade called the Brian Blade Fellowship. He plays with Roseanne Cash and has worked with Joni Mitchell. He's also a master. The vibes player is a guy that I've worked with a lot on not only Rocco's Modern Life, but Nurse Jackie and Bored to Death. So he was a guy I knew, and we had a good relationship. But that was a big deal to me, to prepare the music every week for musicians on that level. And, sometimes we subbed it out to another drummer named Dan Reeser or Danny Fox on piano, Rob Jost on bass. These are really great guys. And it was a challenge for me to make music that was challenging for them. And but yet worked for the show. I mean, that's the bottom line. It had to be a soundtrack for the show. So anyway, it was a great a great experience for me. And all I want to do is more. That's all I say.
Yeah, I mean, I really, really like the sound. Like you say, it does have that kind of almost old school cop show feel to it, which is lovely. And it's just very different from what you would normally hear for a lot of those kind of procedural shows. So, you know, that I really like about it. It's a really interesting sound for it. It's a lovely series. It's a really interesting little show. Mm-hmm. Just going back a little bit, you've been in various different bands, obviously, over the years. You've kind of founded two bands. You're in the B-52s. You've just come back off tour as well, haven't you? You're playing with Pipe Out. Mm-hmm. So when did you decide or maybe realize that music was going to be your career?
I have been playing music professionally for a long time.
Yeah.
In this country since grade school. And high school, I would sneak out of the house to play in bars and taverns, but it was not encouraged at home. I didn't study it. So by the time I was out of college or university and I even spent some time going to school in London in 1977. And then after college, I had a research grant and lived in Paris.
Right.
And it was a big deal. My topic, I suppose, my project was to investigate American expatriate jazz musicians. The jazz scene. And it's a cool subject. Yeah. And it should be investigated someday. But it didn't take long for me to figure out that this wasn't my thing. I was not going to be a writer. I wasn't really that invested in it.
Yeah.
But what was happening is I was meeting full-time committed musicians for the first time in my life, professionals, because I hadn't gone to school. So I didn't know any during school. And eventually I was directed towards the composer John Cage. And I was able to study with him and work and perform with him. And I had never, ever worked with anybody probably before or since, to be honest with you, with that much conviction.
Yeah.
And it just bubbled up inside of me. I'm not kidding you. And all I wanted to do, and this would have been 1978, would be to get back to New York City and play either CBGB's or Max's Kansas City. And from there, it just kind of took off. I got involved with some really great bands very early on and became friends with the B-52s at that time, and also had the opportunity to work on some films. And it's just sort of unfolded ever since.
I mean, I don't suppose you've ever really transitioned from being a sort of touring musician to being a composer. You're very much both, because as I say, you've just come back off tour anyway. So I'm surprised you're managing to find the time to do like both of the things. That's really quite impressive.
Ah, thanks. It's just all sort of been that way.
Yeah.
I was working on the cartoons, the first couple cartoons that I scored, and I was on the road with the B-52s, and I still have enormous road cases where the television and my synthesizers and the computer, everything would fit in them. And every night the crew would have to take these big, huge cases off the bus and put them up to my room. And I'd work all night. And, you know, there were some deadlines in there that got pretty crazy.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's sort of the way I've done it. And I like how they feed each other.
Yeah.
And to be honest with you, I don't know that I could do it any differently.
That's crazy, given what TV deadlines, I know TV deadlines, particularly for composers, can be absolutely horrendous. So that's nuts, you're doing that on the road.
Yeah, it was nuts. You know, I didn't actually get any extra credit for it. There would be times where I would just almost be in tears.
I can imagine.
You're like, oh God, I'm gonna die. I can't handle, you know, particularly when it came to like revisions. And you've got to be able to do the revisions. You just have to be able to do them. But I also had a lot of people on my side, you know, helping me. You know, I would fly to LA to do one of the cartoons, and they were really patient with me. I think that's the best way to put it. At first, I thought I was going to get fired every time I went in the room to do a session. I know that I'm not like a normal Hollywood LA type composer.
Yeah.
And at times when I was younger, I didn't understand that. I was like, well, shoot, I can do that. Let me do that. I can do that. Why not? Why? You know, I'll do it. And now I realize that I am who I am.
Yeah.
It just is what it's going to be. So when a job like The Good Cop comes my way, it's pretty precious. And I recognize it as that. I'm very fortunate.
As well as The Good Cop, the other thing which you've got coming up, the return to Rocco's Modern Life again, which is, what, 22 years, I think, since the series was on?
Is that it? Wow.
Yeah, well, 96 it went off air. So, yeah, 22 years. That's crazy. You're coming back. Nickelodeon are doing a movie version of it, aren't they? So how is it coming back to that show after such a long period of time away from it?
Well, I knew that it was going to be hard.
Yeah.
And I don't know why I'm leading with that first, but, you know, I've done enough that I know that it wasn't going to be relaxing.
Yeah.
What was a shock to me is Nickelodeon did not have a record of any of the music from Rocco's Modern Life.
Really?
They didn't have any archives.
That's crazy.
But I did. Yeah. And so I got it digitized, sent it to them, and they began to put it into the drawings, into the animatics and the animation as a temp score. That was helpful.
Yeah.
So I knew the vocabulary and it came back to me pretty quickly. I used the same musicians. So that made it like a family reunion.
Yeah.
And I don't know, it was sort of like, hold on. It was like being inside an engine. It was a blast though. The musicians were really cool. Same guys that I worked with before, except for one drummer who played on The Good Cop as well.
Right.
A guy named Dan Reeser, who is one of my favorite musicians. He played drums on one of the sessions. So I kind of knew it was going to be intense. That music is like a license to be crazy.
Yeah.
It's out there. And I'm not the same person I was 22 years ago. Mm. It just, for some reason, it wasn't that hard for me to kind of recall that vocabulary and use some of the same themes. That was fun. That was one mandate from Joe is like, well, no, he said, are you going to do it? And I said, well, yeah, you know, if you'll have me, I'll do it. And then he said, do you want to use the same musicians? And I said, yes. And are you going to use the same themes? And I said, yes. And that was actually the only conversation we had.
Oh dear, that's crazy. I mean, I have to say the music for that show, I mean, I'm 43 now, so I was sort of early 20s when that was on air. And I don't remember a whole lot about the actual animation and the cartoon itself. I mean, I remember what it looked like. I just don't remember much about the actual show. I do remember that theme tune. Unquestionably, the theme tune is the thing that really sticks in my head. So you're obviously doing something right the first time around.
Well, thanks. I mean, let me tell you, that band, that's another band that I would rave about. I mean, the trombone player is the last living guy to have been in the Duke Ellington Orchestra.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's nuts.
And the drummer was with Anthony Braxton and John Zorn. The clarinet player played with a guy named Don Byron, who had done a record when I was first starting Mako. He was with Don Byron, who had just done a record called Bug Music, which played the music of Raymond Scott.
Right.
It's a really good record. So I had some amazing musicians. And then there were other guys, musicians. I got a bagpipe player on one episode. The banjo player, Tony Trischka, played on one. Various violin players, an accordion player named Rochelle Garnier. You know, it was supplemented. But I had the same core group. And it was kind of that trombone player raised the level up to a pretty amazing spot. And I would look at him, he would bring in his mutes, and I would think, oh my God, he used that equipment with Duke Ellington. and he's a pretty legendary guy.
It's a great, great music. I can't believe Nickelodeon didn't have a copy of it. That's insane. For you, is there any difference in composing for live action versus composing animation?
Yes. In animation, you're a lot closer to the picture. You get really close there. I mean, it's called Mickey Mousing for a reason. You know, you're literally just playing right up in there to the action. And I even look at it like sometimes I'm inside the drawings. I really want to get to know those drawings. And when I worked on it first, Joe Murray and I had some really memorable conversations about the colors. There's no straight angles in the drawing. There's no 90 degree angles. There are no straight lines. It's almost like a glass of water is completely filled and overflowing all the time. It's just constant over.
Yeah.
Again, I had a small band for practical reasons, economic reasons, but I also wanted it live. I wanted it to be live. I think that's why you're talking about it. I think it has that kind of sparkle, that energy. When you do, when you do film, or in the case of The Good Cop, television, you put yourself back a little further. And it's hard to imagine sometimes after doing animation where you're so close to the picture, but you need to put yourself back in a different place. There's more distance between you and the image. And that's really how I would describe it.
I can see what you're saying with that. I mean, music's important in both, but I guess with the animation, it's so much more intertwined with everything that's going on screen, I guess.
Yeah, it's as simple as that.
Yeah.
Except it's not that simple. But it's as simple as that. And there was an article I once read in The New Yorker by the writer Alex Ross, who, it was an interview, I believe, with Philip Glass. And it was Philip who said, that's part of the job as a film composer is to accurately judge the distance between the composer and the image. Mm-hmm. And that just stuck with me. It serves me well. You know, it's very basic, but hits it.
Yeah, really get that. What would you say has been the most interesting experience you've had in your career?
I've had some glory. I mean, playing with the B-52s in Central Park in front of the largest crowd ever to be in Central Park.
Wow.
That's pretty cool. And then that same weekend, we played Radio City Music Hall. But working on Rocco's Modern Life is a real high point. I mean, that every week for years, you know, and then, you know, we'd take breaks, but then it would pick up again. But it was just like, I waited for the next one. It was like being on a sports team or a kid, you know, at the playground, and you're going, give me the ball. I want the ball. I want to play. And that's really all I wanted to do. But I've had some pretty cool experiences. I mean, you know, being in a band with Lydia Lunch, that's kind of fun.
Yeah.
The Raybeats, a band I was in, actually got to do a recording with Philip Glass.
Wow.
Working with John Cage is unforgettable. Mm. You know, I've had some pretty nice high points.
Yeah, they seem pretty high, I would say. That's very cool.
Yeah.
Last couple of questions we always ask people whenever they come on. First one is, what TV shows are you watching at the moment?
Oh, well, I like the show Glow.
Right, yeah, the Netflix series.
Yeah. And I don't have time to get invested into too many shows.
Yeah.
Glow is one of them. I liked Ozark.
Yes.
You know, and I need to get caught up on that. And so if your question is what I'm watching now, the answer would be Glow.
You get brownie points for picking Netflix shows, I think, from you.
That didn't even occur to me. Well, it's funny how that works, right?
Yeah.
What do you expect? I can turn it up, get them when I want.
Yeah.
I can stream them when I want. I mean, it's
not uncommon for people in your industry to go for Netflix shows because the convenience, you know. The last question will be, if you had the opportunity to work on any TV show, past, present, or future, not one that you've previously worked on, which show would it be?
Oh, man.
And this always stumps people.
I've mentioned Peter Gunn.
Yeah.
Mission Impossible.
Oh, yeah.
Which Lalo Schifrin did. But, you know, in contemporary shows, you know, Breaking Bad or The Sopranos, even Mad Men, you know, just those. I love the show Girls.
Oh, yeah.
HBO. And to be honest with you, I'd be pretty hard pressed to say that I would be, you know, I love the music for that show. I think that composer, Michael Penn, did a great job, inspiring job on that. I like the music for Transparent. So, you know, those are shows that resonate with me.
That's very cool. Well, thank you for giving up a bit of your time. I'd be very happy to have you on. Looking forward to, I haven't finished The Good Cop yet, so I'm looking forward to finishing the rest of the first season. I hope it gets picked up again. It'd be great to have it back.
I do too. And then we can chat more. Let's see where it goes, the music. I mean, the music kind of gets better as it goes along. So I'd be curious to hear your opinions on it. I got into a vibe where I understood that the humor on that show was kind of taking care of itself, but it was the mystery and the drama that I needed to really work on. And that got fun. That was cool.
I'll listen out for that as I go through the, I think I'm about halfway through. So when I go through the rest of the episodes, I shall listen out for it.
Cool. All right.
What, you've got anything else coming up that you want to mention?
I mean, I have this band. I have a couple bands in the works, the PI Power Trio, which we just had a ball with Nick Lowe. He's really something else. And I have this other band called Suss, which is spelled S-U-S-S. And you can find us wherever you stream music, both of them.
Yeah.
And Suss is making a new record right now. So that's kind of what I'm working on, both of those bands.
It's very cool. Very cool music.
Thank you.
Awesome. Well, I'll let you get back to your day. Thank you for coming on. It's been lovely to have you.
Thank you for having me. We'll talk again.
Yes, we will. Talk to you soon. So that was the interview with Pat Irwin. Hope you enjoyed that. You can find The Good Cop on Netflix. The Rocko's Modern Life film, not entirely sure whether that's coming out, but I look out for it on the Nick TV channel. Next, we have some highlights for next week on TV. So, highlights for next week on TV. We have a number of shows still returning. It's still in that period where we've got returning things coming back. The Russell Howard Hour is back for its second season. That's on Sky One on the 8th of November at 10 p.m. I really like the first season of that. It's basically Russell Howard's good news, but without the kind of good news bit at the end, pretty much. It's almost exactly the same show. Very funny. Well worth watching. That's on Sky One, 8th of November at 10 p.m. Young Sheldon is back for its second season. That's on the 8th of November at 8:30 p.m. The Big Bang spin-off. I'm glad they've not kind of waited for this. They've decided to show it early, which I'm very happy about. That's good that that's back. Patriot season 2 of that is returning to Amazon Prime. That's on the 9th of November. That comes back. The Sinner season 2 of that comes to Netflix. That's on the 9th of November. That comes back. Mars, which is the other Mars show that isn't the first, that's coming to National comes to National Geographic on the 11th of November. I love the first season of this. It was really interesting. They basically take documentary real life kind of footage of stuff that's happening now with attempts to sort of build rockets and stuff to get to Mars and mix it in with a narrative drama, which is the first sort of people landing and setting up life on Mars. So it's a really sort of interesting National Geographic kind of thing of this sort of real life stuff mixed with a fictional drama. I really enjoyed it. But 11th November, I'm not sure on a time for that yet, but it'll be kind of 9:10 p.m. But that's on National Geographic. Mars season 2, well worth going to watch that. Really good. Then Blindspot season 4 of that, coming to Sky Witness on the 11th of November at 10 p.m. which is Sullivan Stapleton, Jamie Alexander back with various tattoos and various ways of solving tattoos. That returns to Sky Witness on 11th of November at 10 p.m. So that's everything this week, unless you've got anything else you want to add in.
That's all.
So where can you find Daryl?
You can find Daryl on Twitter at Shaftsword, which is S-H-A-F-T-S-W-O-R-D, or you can find me writing on HollywoodNewsSource.com, doing news there. Head over to Starry Mag, and if you're a fan of The Gifted, you can get my recaps there. So if for whatever reason you can't watch one of the episodes, or you want to go back over the facts of the matter before seeing the new one, you can go there and find them.
So go and check Daryl out there. For us, you can visit the website at geektown.co.uk throughout the week to see all the latest air date info. Want to get in touch with your questions and comments, email us on podcast@geektown.co.uk, leave a message on the website post, find us at Geektown on Twitter, on Facebook at facebook.com/geektown, on YouTube at youtube.com/geektown, on Instagram at geektownuk, and don't forget you can find us on Spotify now. Just search for Geektown Radio on Spotify. We shall come up. That's everything. We shall see you next week. Bye-bye.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Want to join a film club that has real, frank discussions, talking about films that you actually want to watch? Well, then look no further, because we are Frank Film Club with me, Maisie Williams. And each week we watch a film and then come together and obsess over it, or sometimes absolutely slate it. Either way, there's always a lot to say. And the films that we pick range all the way from like 90s and noughties classics all the way up to new releases that are coming out every single week. And sometimes we get our listeners to pick for us.
And we all work in the film industry, don't we, ladies?
Indeed.
So we really love to look at specifically how a film was made.
So if this sounds like your bag, then come and have a listen to Frank Film Club. And remember, absolutely everyone is welcome in this club.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.